Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Transperfect Lifestyle Talks. I'm your host, Mark Wade. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Alice Begain. She's Associate Director of Patient Outcome and Research and Innovation at Pfizer. Alice, welcome to Transperfect Lifestyle Talks.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Okay, our full first disclosure is Alice and I are both Irish, so therefore we've agreed that we're going to temper our speech pattern and speech speed. Because when you get two Irish people together, unfortunately, they speak at 100 miles an hour, which I'm doing right now already. Anyway, so thanks, Alice. Full disclosure, Alice was on a Transperfect event, C3, which, if anyone hasn't been there, it's definitely worthwhile. But Alice was on a panel and it was so well received that I just thought, you know what? People are genuinely very interested in this topic, the meaningful patient involvement in HTA decision making. So I thought, let's get Alice back. So, do you remember what we talked about C3, Alice? We talked about HTA markets and stuff, right? And we talked about what role do PRO measures play in this? And you had some opinions, some ideas around instruments and gathering data from patients with generic. Am I right saying generic? We have to say
Yeah,
generic instruments.
that's
Okay,
right.
so if we could begin there, I think that'd be a good place to start.
Thanks, Mark. I'm pleased to hear it was so well received at C3. I think on that panel, I was sort of flying the flag of PRO measures in the context of HTA, right? As opposed to the more usual conversations we might hear around regulatory decisions. And I think it's, a topic that's very close to my heart. It's something I'm doing on a regular basis, taking the PRO measures that we're using in our trials or also using in the real world setting and using that to support HTA submissions. I appreciate not everyone in your audience will be familiar perhaps with the concept of HTA, so I'll just very briefly say that it's quite the multidisciplinary process that evaluates properties, effects, and the impact of health technologies and interventions, usually with the view of informing policy decisions and improving healthcare at kind of a national system level. Where it gets interesting in terms of PRO measures is HTA process considers a variety of evidence. Of course, your typical clinical effectiveness, where we can have the use of COAs such as disease-specific measures, I'm sure we're all very familiar with, but it also looks quite closely at cost effectiveness. And that's where the PRO measure, or I guess more accurately for some of the purists out there, preference-based measures also play a role. So these are PRO measures that are able to generate utility values. And those utility values are a preference for the time spent in a given health state on a scale of 0 to 1, where 0 means death and 1 means full health. And these values are used in our health economic modelling to assess cost effectiveness on a system level. So, what I'm trying to get at, a long way around, is I look at them through two different lenses, basically.
And then the instruments, you call them generic instruments. Some of them are general well-being instruments, and then some of the more newer instruments are much more rifled, let's say. Where do we land with that, though? We still have to use generic instruments, don't we?
So for like HTA systems, there is a very strong preference for using these generic preference-based measures because of the utility value. And to be fair, it's with good reason. The idea being these generic measures can be applied across a range of situations and disease areas so that you're almost leveling the playing field. You have a degree of transparency. And when you think about taxpayer-funded systems such as the NHS, that's really important. That level of transparency and sort of the appropriate allocation of funds aligned with societal values and where it all stacks up. Where it can create some interesting challenges or points of consideration is if you have a patient population which may not be fully represented in terms of their burden by the questions that are being asked through that generic measure. If it's a little bit too broad, perhaps, or it's not focused enough on maybe the area of their health-related quality of life, which is most significantly burdened. So that's where questions for researchers such as me start to come in of, well, is that truly fair and transparent for those patients? Or are we leaving a significant amount of value behind? Both in terms of the potential for this potential treatment, but also in understanding and quantifying the burden of their disease.
So I want to come back to Burton because that is the big deal for me. But you talk about the payer market, like who's paying for the study? Is it the sponsor? Is who is it like?
So, in the most ideal setting, these measures will be included in your clinical trial alongside with your other PRO measures. So, these utility measures that I have mentioned. So, in that sense, it's coming back to the sponsor, right? Because they're running the clinical trial, they're including it as part of their schedule of assessments, and hopefully that will provide the evidence that you need to show cost effectiveness along with clinical effectiveness. Where it might become a bit more interesting is if you have to rely on real world evidence studies to pick up signal or to assess burden. And there have been questions raised over, well, who should be paying for that at that point? Because you're adding extra layers of studies. And I guess in my experience, it always comes back to the sponsor. But increasingly, you've also got collaboration starting of organized groups within certain disease areas who might take it on and do it themselves. But I guess ultimately, the answer is back to the sponsor.
Back to the sponsor. Okay. I'm going to go back to burden because I was someone that, and it's such a big topic because I see burden in a number of ways. So if we can just go back to, we talk about generic measures and I call them Christmas trees protocols where they have so many instruments hanging on like Christmas decorations. That's a massive burden on a patient. And one of the biggest pushbacks that I hear is it's a lot of the times the same question asked over and over again. And if you have these generic instruments, I mean, is there any way we can get around this?
I think it's such an important question, and I think it's a conversation as a community I hear happening, but I think we need to be having it more widely because when I think about, as you just said, the Christmas tree, or sort of, I look at it more as like a shopping list, right, of what we put into the protocol. You're right. I've seen protocols where we have a huge amount of measures. We have a huge amount of potentially repetitive measures. We have measures that may only be slightly relevant and have a couple of irrelevant domains. Yeah, it can get quite big and it can get quite busy very quickly. And I think having been on the side of the person who's been trying to put together those strategies, the biggest challenge is you're trying to satisfy so many different groups, right? You're trying to satisfy the regulators in across various countries, and then you're also trying to satisfy the payer market across different countries. And within that, we might have some bit of variation of standards in terms of what is accepted. So back to a HTA market such as the UK, there is a very strong need to have included a utility generating measure. So that's immediately one measure in. I think the shortest one I can think of is 5 questions, but you might include one that's 36 questions,
I know
depending on.
exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you also then need to think about your disease specific measures, and you can't necessarily use item banks because some countries don't want that too. So I have a lot of empathy. It gets busy very, very quickly. And all of these decision makers are important, right? Because
Sure.
ultimately they are the gateholders to access to patients. Where if it's too long a shopping list, do things get missed off? Do patients give up midway through the assessment? Do sites have time to even give out the assessment? And, if that's happening, you also end up in a situation where you've potentially used a lot of resource and might not have the return that you really need to satisfy all these conditions. So, yeah, I think it's a really important question. I think I have a couple of ideas. I'm sure someone out there will tell me they're naive as to how we could potentially start tackling them. But what I would say is, I think it's a very important conversation to have with the right people at the table, the representatives from these different payers, the regulators, patient groups themselves. And to start tackling it head on, be it through communication efforts, standardization of outcomes, such as hopefully what the joint clinical assessment are about to start doing within the European member states. And yeah, it's when someone comes up with the answer, I'm sure we'll all be very grateful.
So I think people like you live on a balancing act, the balance of like how much can you tag on to get the data that you want, at the same time not overburden the patient because they'll disengage. We know from years ago for IVRS that patients disengage after a certain number of questions because it becomes too burdensome and they start clicking any answer they want, whatever it is, because they just want to get the damn thing done. So it is a balancing act that you guys have to deal with all the time. So you mentioned item banks and I'm kind of glad that you mentioned that because JCA guidance, and that's a European thing, really. Does that speak to that at all?
I've not seen item banks come up in the JCA guidance. You're right, it is a European thing. It is the joint clinical assessment, which is, I think, hoping to provide a level of standardization so that the EU member states can streamline the assessments of new medicines and technologies. And then, from what I understand, it will then go down to each member state to perform that cost effectiveness analysis. So I've not seen item banks being mentioned. That's not to say they're not there, but what I have seen being mentioned are core outcome sets. And I think that's a very interesting topic when you think about burden more generally in clinical trials. So not just burden on the assessment of PROs, it'll definitely have a role in that, but sort of the outcomes that we measure more widely, and making standardizations there will also probably reduce burden. So I think that's definitely an interesting space to watch.
It could be. It really could be because in the US we have item banks and it makes an awful lot of sense. Is there any way, and this is a tricky question, is there any way that all these teams could be joined up together, like the US centric item banks and a JCA guidance? Is there any way there could be like some sort of like almost universal agreement, or am I just dreaming?
I mean, it's really good to dream, isn't it? Anything that accelerates the development of these new technologies and improves access to patients. I think it's always worth dreaming about those things. I think it's very important to understand that every system will be different because of, so when we think about, health systems across countries, even health systems across Europe, there's a lot of differences in how they're funded. And then when we think about the US, of course, from what I understand, that is very, very different again. So it stands to reason that with all these sorts of differences in funding, and then you layer on top sort of cultural and societal expectations, that there will have to be layers of nuance and differences and flex within it. And I think even, personally reading between the lines, I wonder if that's why the joint clinical assessment, they're doing clinical effectiveness streamlining, and then the cost effectiveness decisions are still going down to a country level. But if we were to dream big, I think while it might not be possible to align on everything, what would be really fantastic to see is if we could align on the core principles, so have a minimum level of standardization. And that comes back to this idea almost of core outcome sets. I mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, which, do describe themselves as a minimum set of outcomes that should be measured in any trial of a given condition. So not exhaustive, but we have that degree of standardization as a starting point.
And if I'm right, there's five or six item criteria that they use. Is that correct? In the JCA, they list five or six that actually are mission critical items. Am I right?
I don't know for
For
sure about
specific TAs, for specific
the
disease states.
specific TAs. So, in their broader guidance, they are referring back to the use of core outcome sets and urging people to look into whether ones have been developed and are possible for use. So, I think core outcome sets will vary in terms of how many outcomes have been included, depending on the development that went into those. So whether it's five or six, potentially for some TAs, for other TAs, it might be more broad, depending on the disease area and the development process.
There's no, because I'm not overly familiar, but I was led to believe that they have agreed that there is a minimum of like five or six core criteria per TA that must be included. Is that, am I right in assuming that? Or am
For
I?
core outcome sets, generally, yeah, I've seen ones that are, generally speaking, ranging from five to eight things that should be included as minimum. I've seen ones that have gone a lot larger, which I think maybe will bring up other challenges if they get too big. But yes, sorry, you're 100% correct. Usually you're seeing ones that are, between five and eight outcomes as minimum. And some of those are, of course, including outcomes that are like PRO measures, basically, relevant to health-related quality of life.
I think it would be great because we talk about burden on the patient and we talked about that already. But one thing we didn't talk about is burden on the site. And I think I'm going to be controversial, but I think actually sites are unfortunately at the coalface in many ways. because they're dealing with all these different technologies, they're dealing with all these different devices and BYOD and all that good stuff. So they're at the coalface. And I'm just wondering, is there any way we can speak to reduce the burden of patients and perhaps addressing the burden on sites?
You know, back to dreaming big and kind of the importance of this conversation, I think there must be. I think there has to be. Otherwise, we're sort of, you know, continuing on a track that we all know isn't exactly viable and isn't working. And we're dealing with issues of incomplete PRO measures or missing baseline data or visits being cut too short or whatever else is happening out there. I'm a big believer in sort of communication, as basic as it sounds, like really early communication with the right stakeholders in the room and kind of explaining clearly the importance of your PRO strategy or your COA strategy more broadly, and kind of building that trust between sites and patient groups and whatnot, that you haven't just loaded everything in, that back to our what we were saying a little bit earlier, that you've been purposeful, that there's a reason that you know these measures might seem repetitive. They might almost even be irrelevant. They might be a bit like, why have you asked me this in a different way? Which I can appreciate is frustrating.
Yeah.
But explaining that there's good rationale for that and this is how it currently is, finding the language to do that. Maybe also finding the language to speak to payers and regulators early on to say, you know, this is the strategy we're going forward with because of concerns with burden.
Sure.
And also speaking to the sites, understanding, how is it we can equip you better? What is it you need? Are there options of, should we be collecting this data perhaps before the patient comes on site through a different method, which I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about. But ultimately, COA data is very, very important, and it needs to be treated, I guess, with the same seriousness as the other endpoints that we're collecting, because if we don't, we're kind of running into problems later down the road when it comes to, you know, people like me speaking to HTA and explaining why we've got missing data, or you know, my colleagues doing regulatory. The other concept I'm interested in, and, you know, I've had some conversations about this, but I think it's moving. I think it's been slow, but are we measuring things within trials that actually it's not realistic to measure within trials when it comes to health-related quality of life? So the trial, of course, is the gold standard, and I'm not here to argue with that idea. But what is interesting to me is the concept of, well, certain domains and concepts relevant to health-related quality of life within the trial environment, can we really expect to see meaningful change or sensitivity because of, you know, our inclusion-exclusion criteria, for example, or the length of the trial? And in those instances where we think, well, actually, it might not be measurable there, can we utilize studies in the real world? Can we go out and look at it through a different lens and create, you know, evidence that's just as robust and hopefully very complementary to what we're seeing in the trial? And would that be a way of reducing burden?
I think it could be. And I think it's very fair to dream big. Thanks, Alice. That was a really good conversation. Today I was joined by Alice Begain. She's from Pfizer. She's the Associate Director of Clinical Outcomes Research and Innovation. I really enjoyed the conversation today. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, if you want to come on the podcast, click on the link below. Thanks again. Alice, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.